The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting to 7 continents. Consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good morning, listeners. Welcome to the Friday Morning Space Show. I am your host, David Livingston. Thank you all for tuning in. Please write down our toll-free number if you would like to give us a call today. It is 1-866-687-7223. And remember, no call screeners, so be patient and let it ring, and we'll bring you up on air as quickly as possible. For those of you listening at work and you can't use the telephone, email, of course, is drspace@thespaceshow.com. A couple of other quick announcements. Please do remember that we're a trademarked and copyrighted show, and you are free to download these programs and distribute them to people you think should hear them or be interested in them. Remember, a 90-minute program is roughly 40 megabytes, so if you need some help on how to send that around on the Internet, please let me know. I'll be glad to tell you how we do it. It's very easy. And then in addition to that, we are podcasting, and you can pick up our podcast on iTunes and Microsoft Zoom and a host of other places as well. And if you're listening and you want the email address, we're using drspace@thespaceshow.com today, so that will be current. And let me see what else I can tell you about today. On our website, you'll see the detailed newsletter. Our website, thespaceshow.com, and about in the middle of the page is our detailed website newsletter. So this is the newsletter that has all the details of the week's programs, guest bios, and it's the only place we have a future events section. Also, when we have to reschedule for some reason or change our schedule, we put those announcements up first on the website newsletter. So do check it to stay current. And you can also subscribe to the email newsletter from the website newsletter. And email goes out early Monday morning, California time. Very, very short. Won't clutter up your inbox at all. Just one or two lines about the week's program. And also on our website, every one of our programs is archived. You can listen right off of our site or easily download the programs. You can use the guest search tool to search for keywords or key guest, and that will give you all of the dates that person or that keyword, like say space tourism, was talked about on the show. Write them down, and then you can go back to our website search engine down at the bottom, which will allow you to... sorry, I forgot to turn my cell phone off, which will allow you to then pick up all of the shows that you jotted down. Sorry, it's not interactive yet, but at least it will tell you if your favorite guest has ever been on the show. If not, certainly do recommend him or her to me. There is a store on the website. You'll see it up near the top. And there you can find all sorts of different things that have the Space Show logo and name on them. Please do check it out, especially given that the holidays are coming up. And then the most important button I think that is up there is support the Space Show. Remember, we're a nonprofit 501c3 through the One Giant Leap Foundation.org. And we appreciate your support. It's what keeps the Space Show on the air. And remember, for those of you paying federal U.S. taxes, you're entitled to a tax deduction, as we are a nonprofit. The same is true for those of you that pay California taxes, as One Giant Leap Foundation is a California public benefit corporation. If you have any questions, go to onegiantleapfoundation.org or drop me an email or check with your tax advisor to see what's up. Also, remember that we have an Amazon portal. And you can find that on our blog, on all of the archive shows, on the Space Show website, and the One Giant Leap website. If you purchase anything from Amazon, if you go through that portal and then access your account through that portal and then buy that way, Amazon makes a donation to the Space Show for a percentage of whatever it is you're buying. And we thank those of you who use that, and it's a great way to support the Space Show, especially if you're Amazon users like I am. It's really easy. And by the way, once you go through the portal and you open your account, the next time you go through the portal, it saves the fact that you've opened your account that way. Do remember also that we are brought to you in part by the Secure World Foundation. Secure World promotes cooperative solutions for space security. You can get a lot more information about this organization at their website, www.swfound.org. They do produce and sponsor our webinar series. Great organization to be part of, and we look forward to continuing this relationship on into next year. So that brings me to our program today, and I am really happy to bring back Frank White. And Frank has been one of the early guests on the Space Show, talking about his classic and most famous book and excellent book, The Overview Effect, which I understand is in the process of having the third edition created. Frank is a writer who has spent much of his career thinking about the implications of space exploration for human evolution. He has authored a total of 10 books, including The Overview Effect, The SETI Factor, The New Camelot, March of the Millennia, and Think About Space with Isaac Asimov, The Ice Chronicles with Paul Myweski, and Decision Earth, a novel. His latest book, The New Camelot, offers a new interpretation of the Apollo program, comparing the Apollo astronauts to King Arthur's Knights of the Round Table, and suggesting that the overview effect is the holy grail of our time. Recent developments in both government and non-government space exploration efforts appear to vindicate many of the ideas that were initially explicated in the overview effect, and Frank, as I said, is now revising that work into the third edition, where he is focusing on trends that have begun to appear since the first edition came out in 1987. He is co-founder of the Overview Institute, which was established in part to carry forward the work that began with the publication of his book, which, by the way, last year had its 25th anniversary. Frank, welcome back to the Space Show. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you, David. It's good to be back.
Likewise, good to talk to you again. So let's start out, and I know from your emails and from discussions, you really thought highly of the movie Gravity, and you can associate it with our discussion topic of today, correct?
Yes.
Tell us about it.
Well, there are many, many aspects to it that are interesting, and of course, what I relate it to is the overview effect, or the experience of the astronaut seeing the Earth from space and in space. So I might have been looking at it a little bit differently than other people, but let me just kind of go through the levels of interest that came up for me. First is how many people said to me, "Hey, I saw Gravity and I thought of you. I saw Gravity, I thought of the overview effect." And you know, it was very, very interesting. My son called me up and said, "Have you seen it yet?" And I said, "No." And he said, "I can't believe you haven't seen it." And, of course, I did go out and see it right away. But that was one thing that struck me, is that in the years since the book was first published, this idea of the overview effect has become common enough that when people would see a film like that, which is right out there in the popular media, an extremely popular film, that was an association they made. So that said something to me about the extent to which the idea has become relatively well known. Of course, most of the people calling me knew me, but nevertheless, a second level of that is that I've seen at least three reviews of the film in which the thrust of the review was, did this film bring out the overview effect or not? And I just went back and looked at those three reviews, and what was common among the reviews, whether they liked the film or not, was they all said it did not bring out the underlying philosophical aspects of the overview effect. And one in particular by Claire Evans, who has a blog, I think it's called Universe, and who has interviewed me about the overview effect, she actually called it underselling the overview. And her review talked about the fact that there was no spirituality to it, no philosophy to it. And it, on the other hand, she praised it because she talked about it being lowercase space with a lowercase s. And what she meant by that was the film depicted what it's like for real astronauts to be out there doing a job and facing danger and, actually trying to survive in a hostile environment. But she closed the review saying she's really looking forward to the film that does bring out the overview effect. Another reviewer named Alatea opened with a quote from Ron Guerin. And I believe the quote may have come from another film that is actually very good at portraying the overview effect called Overview, which is a 19-minute documentary by Planetary Collective. And this reviewer said, it was too bad that Sandra Bullock or the character Ryan Stone didn't really have time to appreciate the view before she was trying to save her life. And again, mentioned there's no philosophy to it. And then Pam Platt, who writes for a paper called The Courier Journal, more or less echoed the other two. But Pam Platt also had a comment that I thought was kind of funny. I've never heard anybody say anything like this before. She said, they don't really reveal the overview effect, which is the rather pedestrian phrase for what happens to astronauts when they're in orbit or on the moon. I guess that's damning with faint praise. I'm not sure. But the point is, once again, three reviews out of many, many reviews, of course, that actually judge the film to some extent by the extent to which it brought out what I have been writing about all these years. And so in that sense, I felt that it was again, a reinforcement of the idea that the overview effect has been talked about to the extent that it is seen as relevant to popular culture, which I think is a very good thing. And then, you know, as far as my own experience of the film, I saw it in 3D, but I did not see it at an IMAX theater, so I may not have gotten everything that it has to offer, but I would say, like any work of art, there are good aspects and not bad, but not so good aspects. I think what was really good is that any film about this topic, about space exploration that makes it real, is good. My colleague David Beaver at the Overview Institute has talked about the fact that since the 60s, the heyday of Apollo, space awareness has diminished, and we don't see enough of this idea in popular culture. I thought they also did a very good job of reproducing something the astronauts have told me about. And interestingly enough, it's zero gravity. The title is very interesting because in some ways what they did best was produce the feeling of being out there and floating in what we would call an EVA, or extravehicular activity, no up or down, the ability to move around very freely. And I'm told that George Clooney actually had a man maneuvering unit that he was using, which is what the astronauts do. I thought they had some good views of the Earth from space, and that they did, to some extent, reproduce that sense of looking at it from a distance. And I think another thing that the astronauts have talked to me about that is really an underlying message of the film is this idea, as Ron Guerin talks about it, of the Earth being a fragile oasis. That there is nowhere else nearby or even within striking distance that we know about that is so amenable to life as we know it. It doesn't mean that other planets can't be made habitable or that we can't live in space, but just that this idea of the Earth as a fragile oasis, or as some of the astronauts called it, a lifeboat in a vast and hostile sea, this whole sense of the difference between seeing the Earth from space, but also seeing it in space, seeing it in the context of the universe. And I think they brought that out, and they intended to. And we certainly see it when Sandra Bullock survives and gets back to the Earth and gets down on her hands and knees and is so overjoyed to be there. So I think that they brought that out. And in those areas, I think that they did bring out the sense of what it's like to be out there and to experience the overview effect. Some of the things that I think could have been better are, one, the female part I thought was very stereotypical and very Hollywood. From the very beginning, Sandra Bullock character is going, oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And the George Clooney character, the male, is helping her to get through it. And that pretty much persists all the way through the film until a certain point where she takes over on her own. And I know she was meant to be sort of a rookie astronaut, but the women astronauts I've met or talked to would not have had that problem. The other thing, and it's kind of in contrast to what I said before, in terms of some of the things astronauts have told me about what it's like to see the Earth from orbit, I don't think they did capture that. Nicole Stott has talked about it being almost alive and glowing, and others have talked about it being warm and inviting. And I think that given some of the video that we now have available to us from the space station, that the filmmakers might have been able to bring out that aspect of the overview effect more strongly. But, I mean, these are quibbles, and overall, I think they did a great job. I mean, the last thing I would say, I was talking about this with Alex Howerton, who's a colleague at the Overview Institute, and he pointed out that the Earth is not the star of this particular film. It's kind of a passive background observer. And we talked about the fact that someday a film will be made, a feature-length film will be made, in which a planet, i.e. the Earth, will be the star, which is a metaphor that I really like. So I think this is a step in the right direction, and, you know, I applaud them for the effort. And as Claire Evans said in her review, I'm looking forward to the ultimate overview effect film.
Well, she might have a long wait, but, I saw it in 3D too, but not in IMAX. And I enjoyed it. It really, as I told you in an email, it was so mechanical to me and so based on the engineering and the processes and the technology that I didn't get an overview message at all. I didn't get that from looking at Earth or mm-hmm. anything. And in fact, there's a 1950s movie. I think it was From Earth to Moon, one of the really early 50s classic sci-fi movies, and they blast off from Earth in their rocket ship. As they're going outward, you see the moon, you see the Earth come back into view through their porthole window. Mm-hmm. And it dawned on me that classic view of the Earth in this early 1950s film was far more compelling as an overview effect view of the Earth than anything I've seen in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was From Earth to the Moon, but I may be wrong, but it's like a 1952 sci-fi film, and they've just got this incredible scene of Earth, and it's all in animation, obviously.
Yeah.
But and you weren't around with the overview effect in 1951 and 52, but somehow they got it. And if you ever have a chance to see that film, it's early on in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll find it to be pretty compelling.
Right.
The technology and the orbital dynamics of the movie kind of made me laugh at it a little bit because it was so screwy, but they needed everything to be in the same plane in order to make their storyline work, you know, and to go from one vehicle to another, to, you know, and all of that. And the fact that Sandra kept her hair down all the time in perfect condition was that's also, I think, plays into the female stereotype that you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
You know, because when you see the women astronauts on the station, they're not worried about their hair. And,
right.
And, you know, it's standing up as straight as a ruler.
Yeah.
And what's her name from North Dakota, Karen Nygrad, even did a classic video on how to wash your hair in the space station in zero-G, which is really a great video. I've directed lots of people to see that.
Yeah.
But, I think you're right. They characterized her as a typical Hollywood woman in the role, including my makeup's got to be perfect, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, you know, George Clooney even had to come back from the dead
To inspire her.
Tell her how to get home.
That's right. But they actually played that well, because she was going into hypoxia, and you do have delusions and fantasy. And I thought that would be natural to possibly fix on something that might help you, and that was probably the freshest thing in her mind.
Yeah.
That might, so I think they depicted that right. And I also think, you know, that last scene in the movie, and I hope that whoever's listening has seen the movie, but a lot of people come back, and as you know, they can't get off the Soyuz or the shuttle on their own power, depending on how long they've been up there. And she manages to get out and crawl and struggle to get up. So, you know, for a one-minute rendition of coming back to gravity that may affect your mobility and your ability to move, I thought they at least gave the viewers an image of the fact that this is not slam dunk.
Yeah.
So I thought that was okay. Plus, as you said, it's like, you come back from a plane accident and you kiss the earth because you're still, you're still around. But I think, like you said, the ultimate overview effect movie has yet to be made by the Hollywood people. And I'm not sure that they really care about that. I don't know any Hollywood people, so I've never had the opportunity to interview them or talk to them. But obviously they want to make the movie that's going to make them the most money, right?
Yeah.
So maybe they don't see movie making the way you and I are talking about right now.
Yeah.
And Gravity's certainly making them great money.
Yeah, and I think that there are many good things about this film, in the sense I'd really like to talk to the guy who directed it and see what his intent was.
Uh-huh.
We don't know that. We don't know what he was trying to do. We don't know if he's a space person or not.
You heard about his Mexico City press interview, right?
No.
Because I've mentioned this on the show.
Okay.
So I think he is Mexican. I'm not 100% sure on that. But he was giving a press interview after Gravity was released for a couple of weeks in Mexico City, and some journalists asked him what it was like making a movie in space. So the guy just rolled the dice with him and told him all of this stuff about how, you know, we had to adjust to the microgravity. You know, it was different being away from Earth. And, you know, he just played the guy, you know, on, and it made the headlines in a lot of the news services. And, you know, I still to this day don't know if this was put on or if the journalist was really that dumb. And and thinking that the movie was so realistic that they actually went to space and made it to space. But the director just rolled with it, and it was actually pretty funny.
That is.
So he'd probably be a pretty good guy to interview if you can get to him.
Yeah, I might try it, and I wonder if he'd come on your show.
I haven't even thought about trying to do that with him, but I would certainly love to have the guy on the show.
Yeah.
It'd be a lot of fun, but you know, maybe you can get him in your third edition of your book.
Yeah, I might try that. That's a good idea. And, you know, I should have said before we started talking, if you haven't seen it, we're going to be doing some spoilers here, but I guess it's too late now.
But, that's right.
You know, another couple of things I would mention about this movie is that one of the people I just talked to today who had seen it at an IMAX theater said that people were waiting a couple of hours to see it. It was packed. And again, I think that there is a brilliant kind of marketing to this in that the director, I think his name is Cuarón or something like that, you know, they were able to get two superstars to be in this film. And many people will go to a movie because it's got George Clooney or Sandra Bullock in it. They don't know, you know, what's going to happen in it, but they know the name. They know the brand. And I think that that was a, I don't know how they did that or why George Clooney and Sandra Bullock were interested in doing it, but that was one aspect that I think is bringing out the crowds. The other thing is, I think that it shows a hunger and a desire and an interest that I am detecting in society for more of this kind of material. And I just point to the fact that Mars One has put out an ad that they're going to send people to Mars, not to go and come back, but to go and settle Mars. And they've got 200,000 people responding to it. Now, I don't know how many of those people really would go if they had the chance, but that they're even willing to put up their hands and say they're interested in it is remarkable. And I think that it just indicates that there are a lot more people interested in this kind of experience or this kind of awareness or this kind of knowledge than we might know.
Yeah, I do. I've interviewed the Mars One people quite a bit. I seriously doubt they'll ever launch, but they do have an enormous following, and people from all over the world are captivated by the idea. So, and I think that is indicative of probably some kind of thirst to do something adventuresome in space. Now, why they want to leave their home or whatever, he told me they don't they don't want to select people who want to leave the Earth because they're unhappy here. They want to get away from their ex-wife or their job or their kids. They want to get people who want to go save the world type of people. So that probably narrows the 200,000 down a little bit. The director is from Mexico City. His name is Alfonso Cuarón Orozco. And how he did this film and why and all of that is, I don't have the history of it, but the fact that it is such a really good film depicting space and all of what we've been talking about, and it comes from a director in Mexico who doesn't stand out as one of the Star Wars, you know, Star Trek, sci-fi special guys like J.J. Abramson and some of the others who have that reputation. To me, it's pretty amazing because he really did a great
job. Nowhere, didn't it?
Yeah, he really did a fabulous job with it, and so I don't know. Maybe he is reachable, especially if he lives in Mexico City. He might really, you know, love the publicity of your book and the space show. So I'm going to try to find him. Maybe if somebody out there knows him or knows how to reach him, you know, let us both know. But I'd really think it would be a really good catch and a really good interview. He was born in 1961, so he's a young guy.
Well, he probably there's at least the chance that he was able to see the Apollo 11 moon landing at the age of 8.
Probably.
It may have inspired him. There are so many people I've talked to who say, when I say, how did you get interested in this feel. They say, I was watching the Apollo moon landing, and I just, that was it, you know. And some of them say, that's when I decided to be an astronaut, or whatever.
He did a film, and I don't recognize all the names, so I'm not even going to bother him. But anyway, apparently it was a controversial film that led to a lot of arguments in 1985, and the guy got expelled from university for it.
Really?
So he's probably as they say, you know, kind of an adventuresome blank kicker.
Sounds like a rebel.
Yeah, a rebel. We can go and do that. But yeah, I'm on IMDb looking up his full bio. So I don't know. I'd like to talk to him too. Maybe we can make that happen. But maybe it also will open the door, since so much money is being made on this film. It'll open the door to other. Realistic and possibly movies that do know the overview effect and make it their point to kind of grab onto that.
Yeah, and I would be remiss if I didn't say that one of the people who is a candidate for that is Douglas Trumbull. Doug Trumbull, who has been one of the founding members of the Overview Institute. And
well, he's with Star Wars, didn't he? Star Trek, didn't he do things for Star Trek?
Yeah, and he worked on 2001 and Blade Runner, and he's worked on a number of really important films. And, you know, he is working on a new system for displaying this type of thing, and it's going to be really incredible, and it's beyond my ability to explain it. But, you know, Doug is a person who really does understand the overview effect very, very well. And I think that he is a person who could well be the person that can pull this off in the future. And I do want to go back to Planetary Collective and Overview. If people want to see that, it's a 19-minute documentary on Vimeo. You know, it's been seen by almost 4 million people, and many of them have posted responses to it, and they do a pretty good job of bringing out the feeling of what we're talking about, even though they're not trying to make it as a feature-length Hollywood-type film.
What is the search term so people can find it on Vimeo?
If you go to Vimeo and just put in Overview, it'll come up.
Okay. All right. I'll see if I can get the direct URL for it, and I'll put it in the archive summary.
I recommend it.
Is that the Overview Institute film that was made? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, it isn't really an Overview Institute film. This is a film, if you're interested in the history of it, might be worth talking about a little bit. In 2011 or thereabouts, I had a email from a fellow in England named Steve Kennedy saying that he and his colleagues had read The Overview Effect when they were teenagers and they would like to make a film about it and asked me to help out. So I put them in contact with some of my astronaut friends and some of my Overview Institute friends and others, and they then went off and made the film. And we premiered it at Harvard last December and had a panel discussing it. In fact, Doug Trumbull was on the panel along with Jeff Hoffman and Ron Guerin, and it was quite a success. We had about 250 people there. About 900 people watched it online. And that event is also, it's on YouTube, and was an extremely successful premiere of the film. And the viewing of it has just really taken off since then. It's been quite gratifying.
And they find that on YouTube?
Yeah, it would be under, Freethink, FreeThink, Freethink at Harvard.
Okay.
And I do recommend it in that it's not only a way of watching the film, but then watching astronauts talk about it, and then Doug Trumbull talking about the challenges of making a film that, in fact, could be said to reproduce the experience.
You have an email question from Jolly, J-O-L-L-Y,
yep,
in Portland. And Jolly said, have you thought of trying to interview the actors in Gravity to see what they knew or what they think about the overview effect, especially after the movie, and especially if they didn't know about it beforehand?
I have thought of it, Jolly, and I guess the only thing that's keeping me from it is that I wouldn't really know how to go about contacting George Clooney or Sandra Bullock. Great idea.
I can tell you how you do it.
How would I do it?
Well, you would Google for their agent, because
you'll
never get to them without going through their agent. And their agents are public.
Right.
So you can find out who represents Sandra Bullock and who represents George Clooney, and you'll just have to work the system. And hopefully you'll get somebody who's interested and won't just blow you off, you know, like a low underling or something like that. But I think it would probably take an awful lot of perseverance. I don't think you can get to them directly unless you happen to know people, you know, that would put you in touch with them. Like if you've interviewed Tom Hanks before and you know him and know how to reach Tom Hanks, you could say, can you help me, you know, get Sandra and them for an interview? And he might put you in direct touch with them.
Yeah. One idea that Jolly gives me here that I think I could easily pursue. Actually, I will see if I can interview them, just to see if it's possible. But the other idea is simply to look at all the publicity they've done for the show, for the movie, and just empirically see if they've commented on their interest. I know that I read one interview with Sandra Bullock, and she did mention how she had prepared for it and what her background was that helped her to do this. But obviously, because they've been publicizing it pretty heavily, they might well reveal whether they had any interest in this topic before, or if they had any epiphanies as they were hanging there above the earth.
Yeah, you could also go through the film company that distributed and made it, like if it's Warner Brothers or whoever made the film.
Yeah.
You could see if you could get someone there that cared enough to forward your letter and your request. So those are the avenues. I mean, I think it's hard to get into these people unless you have personal contacts, but it's worth a try, and you've got something that they may really want to talk about if they find out that you're out there looking for them.
Well, the other thing that I think one of the reasons it's worth our spending so much time on this film and this topic is that in our culture, the best way to distribute an idea on a mass scale is, I believe, through a film or through a television series. There are so many people who really don't know the nitty-gritty of space exploration and don't really want to, but they've seen a film or they've seen a television show or they've absorbed the idea through the mass media. And as you know, David, for whatever it is, 35 years, I've been talking about the overview effect being a message from the universe to humanity about who we are, where we are, and where we're going. And what I'm all about is communicating that message to as many people as I can. So I'm fascinated with doing it through the channels that are available to us, like movies. I also love movies, and I'm fascinated with film. So I do think it's really worth looking at this and trying to figure out if there's a way to move the process forward.
You have another email question from Alan, who is in Houston. And he says, have you interviewed NASA administrators about the overview effect? For example, the current one, Charlie Bolden?
I haven't, but that is a very good idea. And it's one of the things I have indeed wanted to do because, of course, what I'm very interested in is interviewing astronauts and what it's like for them or what it was like for them. Charlie Bolden is particularly interesting, you know, because he was an astronaut and he's now NASA administrator. So it seems to me that gives him two perspectives on it that would be unique, totally unique. And I have not interviewed him, but I would like to.
There's a third aspect to him, and that is he's a Marine Corps general. So you bring into the mix someone who's a combat officer for almost all of his life. And now you're talking something spiritual and something larger than combat, right? And flying shuttles or test planes or something like that. So I think he'd be really interesting to comment on that because he brings to the table these varied backgrounds whether people like him or not is irrelevant. He just has three parts to his background more than that. He has the military side, the aviation side, the space flight side, and now the administrative side.
Yeah, I'd love to talk to him. I did have an experience somewhat like that in interviewing Sandy Magnus, who is a retired astronaut and is now executive director of the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics, AIAA, which is the publisher of The Overview Effect. And it was fun to interview her in the sense that she is a person who has great articulation in describing the experience, and she's also disseminating it through AIAA.
That would also be interesting because that's primarily an engineering organization.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have to give a little tribute here to Ken Cox, who created the connection with AIAA, because Houghton Mifflin published the first edition, and then when it came time for a second edition, they passed on it. And Ken was, I believe, on the board of directors of AIAA. He was also an engineer on the Apollo program, and he's been a great advocate of this idea. And he was the person who connected me with AIAA, and it's not really typical of what they publish. They do publish much more technical books for the most part, but they've shown great interest and great support in this book ever since it was published. And, you know, the second edition was published in 1998 by AIAA, and they've been great in terms of being the publisher of the third edition, and they never really hesitated about, we should do another edition. So I'm very, very positive toward them and what they've done for this whole idea.
Here's another email, and then we'll be halfway through the program, and we'll probably take our break. So Ben is in Miami, Florida, and he says, David, I'm at work, so you know the drill, as your listeners like to say, email only. I'm very interested in space tourism and the suborbital space tourism market once Virgin and X-Corps and maybe one or two of the others actually get going with their vehicles. Do you intend to talk to space tourists that have actually done the suborbital trip? I'm not talking about the tourists that have gone to the ISS for the orbital adventure. I'm specifically focusing in on my question for the joyride 5 to 7 minutes in space of the suborbital tourist. It would be interesting to see if they have any experience along the lines of the overview effect, even though it's a short suborbital trip.
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I would like to talk to some of them. Interestingly enough, back in 2007, I interviewed George and Loretta Whitesides, who many of you may know who they are, both of them very long-time space advocate, and this was before George became the CEO of Virgin Galactic.
Right.
But my whole intent was to interview them before and after the flight, and we're now going over that interview, which of course is kind of out of date at this point. But I'm hoping to use that interview in the book, and then, again, I'm sure George and Loretta will eventually take the flight, and I'm hoping to talk to them afterward. I would like to talk to some of the other folks. There's a guy, I don't recall his name, but there's a guy at Northeastern University, and there was this contest, and I think the flight was on X-Corps, but there was a contest to go on one of their flights, and he won it. I actually entered that contest, incidentally, David, but I didn't get enough votes, so I have to concede to him, but I'm hoping to talk to him. And then one of the other ideas that AIAA had for this version of the book was not just to interview astronauts, but interview new space leaders. And I was very, very fortunate recently to interview Sir Richard Branson for the book. And there are many things that are interesting about him, but if you think about it, he's made a commitment to be the first person to fly. And it occurred to me before I interviewed him that he would really create a lot of records if he goes on that first flight, because I believe it would be the first private person to fly on a private spacecraft. He would be the first knight ever to fly. If his mother goes, she'll be the oldest person to go. And if his children go, they'll be the youngest people. So that's a very interesting fact. But back to your question, I've talked to a few people about the extent to which these early space tourists will have a profound experience. And, you know, I recently did a presentation with Jeff Hoffman, who flew on the shuttle five times, and he said, it will be different, but they will get some of the feeling. They will be weightless. They will see the curvature of the Earth. They will be able to get some of it. And if you think back, Alan Shepard had a similar flight, 15-minute suborbital hop. And he said some pretty exciting things about it. He was very moved by his experience. So that's a little bit of a data point as to whether people will have an overview effect experience or not. And I really would like to interview some of them and find out.
Did Jeff have an overview effect when he was in space and working on the Hubble?
Yeah. You know, he talks a lot about the different aspects of it. And one of the things he talks about that other astronauts have talked about, including Sandy Magnus,
she's the head of AIAA now.
Yeah, right. But what they talk about is that there's this difference between knowing something intellectually and knowing something from experience. And Jeff talks about the fact that when you're in space and you're having that experience, you see the sun as a star. And you realize that the Earth really is a planet moving through space. And he talks about, and a lot of the astronauts talk about the thinness of the Earth's atmosphere, and Jeff talks about the fact that when you're on the surface, the sky is blue and it looks endless. But when you're in orbit, you see that it is a very thin layer of protection that we have. And, of course, the other thing that is part of the experience that maybe doesn't get enough attention is that you're in zero gravity. You're not only seeing these things and feeling these things, but you're floating. And he talks about the fact that he felt very prepared for it, being an astronomer, in that to some extent, through studying astronomy, he had already begun to have some of these insights. And he's also a mountain climber, which is an analog to the overview effect in some ways that you can achieve even though you're not leaving the planet.
Interesting. We're at the halfway point, or marginally past it. So it's a good place to take a pause. Listeners, we'll continue to take your emails, and that is Dr. Space, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. For those of you that have access to phone lines this morning, and I understand those of you listening at work, you do have to use email, and we're accustomed to that. But if you do have access to your phone line, it is 1-866-687-7223. Back with Frank White in 3 minutes.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible. The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible. The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible.
I'm Dr. David Livingston, creator and host of The Space Show, and I would like to share my vision with you for not only this radio program, but for space development. Space should be like any other place we choose to visit, work in, or call our home. It should be just another destination, like Tahiti, Hawaii, or any place available to us right now on Earth. When this vision becomes reality, we will be spacefaring in our culture, our economy, our society, and in our lives. Our world will be vastly improved by countless space-related benefits, transforming our lives both in space and right here on Earth. And the Space Show is helping to make this vision a global reality. And welcome back, everybody. This is part two of our Friday Space Show. Great to be here. Our guest today, Frank White, we're talking overview effect and more. And we're coming up on 50 years of JFK, right?
Absolutely.
What do you think that signifies for the space community or for people interested in space?
Well, you know, there's an untold story, David, that even though there's a spate of documentaries and programs about the 50th anniversary of President Kennedy's death. There's an untold story about Apollo, and you mentioned it in your introduction in regard to my book, The New Camelot, which is on Kindle right now. I had an insight that led to the writing of that book that I would like to share with you, if I could. I'd like to just start with a story. I've always been fascinated with two things, space exploration and King Arthur. And they came together in this book, and it's been brewing for many, many years. But the thing that triggered it was I was home one weekend with my wife, and she was watching Excalibur, the film. And I said, oh, I'll sit down and watch it with you, even though I'd seen it about 20 times. And there's a part in there where the knights of the Round Table are searching for the Holy Grail. And one of them finds it, and he is asked what is the secret of the Grail. And it's basically one king, one land. And it's about the unification of Great Britain. And as I saw that for, again, the 20th time, what occurred to me was, aha, in Arthur's time, unifying the realm was the Holy Grail. In Kennedy's time, moving beyond the Cold War and unification of our planet was the Holy Grail. In other words, it's not a physical object. It's a state of being. And it was truly an epiphany. I have to call it that because a lot of things came together at that moment. And I sat down and I started writing The New Camelot. And in writing it, I came across the work of John Logsdon in his book, John F. Kennedy and the Race to the Moon. And the untold story is that President Kennedy, almost from the beginning of his administration, while he was totally committed to Apollo, and he was committed that if there were going to be a race, by golly, we were going to win, no question about it. But he had a two-track strategy. He was reaching out to the Soviet leaders saying, wouldn't it be better if we went together? And he actually proposed it in Vienna to Khrushchev, who rebuffed him. But all along during the Apollo effort and the moon race, he was reaching out to them saying, hey, there's another way to do this. And especially after the Cuban Missile Crisis, the Soviets started thinking, this isn't a bad idea. And it's increasingly clear from Logsdon's work, I think, that Kennedy was looking at a joint effort as a way of beginning to break down the tensions of the Cold War and to create some sort of a new relationship with the Russians. Even more to the point, in September of 1963, he made a speech at the United Nations. He not only proposed that the U.S. and the Soviet Union should make the lunar landing a joint effort, he said it should be an effort of all the nations of the world. And a few days before his death, he wrote a memo to James Webb, director of NASA, telling him to begin laying the groundwork for more cooperation with the Soviet Union. Of course, he was assassinated shortly after that, and nothing happened. It's interesting that we actually are cooperating with the Russians now, but it could have happened a lot sooner. And it really didn't. Nothing really happened until 1975 when we had the Apollo-Soyuz orbital mission. But it's very interesting to me that many people still characterize President Kennedy's attitude toward Apollo is just, I want to beat the Soviets to the moon, and then that's all I care about. I think he was a lot more interested in the meaning of space exploration than he is given credit for, and I think he did see it as a new evolutionary step for humanity. If I'm right about that, it really is quite extraordinary, because once again, that was 50 years ago that he was able to see all the things we're talking about. The other thing I just want to bring out is that another misunderstanding, I believe, of the Kennedy administration is that there's a so-called Camelot myth. There's this idea that after President Kennedy died, Jackie Kennedy started talking about and comparing it to Camelot. And she was trying to, quote-unquote, create a myth that would burnish the image of the administration and that the reality of it was different. Well, the thing is, Camelot itself is a myth. That is to say, there's some history there, there's some legend there. We don't really know the details about who King Arthur really was. So we're saying it's a myth about a myth. However, I found some information in an interview with Theodore H. White right after the president's death, in which Jackie said that when JFK was young, he was quite ill, and he used to read about King Arthur all the time. And it was very deeply embedded in his psyche. And I think, actually, whether it was conscious or not, I think that this idea of a quest, this idea of going out and doing something extraordinary, was something President Kennedy did embody, and that he was trying to embody. And there were many quests during his administration, but I think Apollo was the great quest of all. And again, what they were looking for and what we ultimately achieved through Apollo was the overview effect, which is this experience of the Earth as one. And we began to see that while there's great diversity and difference when you're on the surface, when you're on the moon or when you're in orbit, you actually see the wholeness of it. You see the unity of it, and you see that there is another way of looking at our planet and understanding it. And I'm still trying to get this message out. And I don't know if it'll take another 35 years to get this idea out, but I do think it's a very, very important re-examination of Apollo and Kennedy and the Apollo astronauts that at least it fascinates me.
Here's another email from you. Alice is in Phoenix, Arizona, and says, David, I'm also at work, so using email, I don't remember how many legitimate countries there are in the world. I suspect there may be around 200, but that may not be an accurate number. Anyway, I'm wondering if your guests can identify any country where the leaders or the governing bodies of the country seem to know about the overview effect and lead or carry on their political leadership in the country and in foreign relations from a perspective of giving importance to the overview effect?
That is a wonderful question, David. And I'm afraid I don't know of anyone who is doing that. I think that in many ways that is kind of our task at this point. Interestingly enough, we had a presentation at the National Air and Space Museum last week on the overview effect, bringing it down to Earth. And that is exactly the idea, I think, which is, what would it be like if we started having political leaders who thought from an overview perspective rather than the perspective we have today? which is also coincidental with what a lot of astronauts have spontaneously said, which is, I really wish we could have a summit conference in orbit. I'd like to bring political leaders out here to see what I'm seeing. They couldn't possibly make the same decisions if they had that point of view. So the simple answer is, I don't know of anyone who operates from that point of view, and I do believe that it's really imperative that we find ways for that to happen, because in a way, that's the whole point of the overview effect, isn't it? It's the overview, which is the experience, and then it's the effect. That is to say, what do people do with it?
Well, here's an idea for you.
Okay.
So, building off the movie Gravity, well, first of all, nobody's going to have a summit in LEO at the space station or any place else. It's too damn expensive and complex.
Right.
To pull that off, and it'd be too many launches to get, I don't know how many people, how many spacefaring nations are there, 80, you know, that signed the Outer Space Treaty. I mean, you couldn't even get them into orbit. But you could create a space station summit. The guy from Gravity, the movie, he could create it. And, and you set it up for world leaders or the UN Security Council or something to attend the first ever zero-gravity summit, even though it's a simulation. Here's the agenda for items to be discussed. And in the meantime, you've got them in a pressurized room so they can wear normal clothes. But they are in microgravity, so they're strapped down to their seats or however you want to depict that. And you've got the space station situated so that all of the windows point to Earthrise. You know, so they can't help but see, you know, the Earth and have that, you know, unification, no boundaries, no fences, you know, no battlefields, you know, perspective. And, you know, if you could do that visually and set it up for a web stream, so maybe even set it up for a pay-per-view web stream so people could log on and they'd have to pay for it. It might help finance it, you know, for the Security Council to do that or real-world leaders to do it. And maybe if you could pull that off after 5 or 6 or 7 years, this thing might grow to something that is really viral and get even more world leaders to do it. So have them devote a day to their space summit, and it's all virtual, and this is going to be the agenda, and and that's the backdrop. And if they could make it look that real in Gravity, you could probably simulate that, and maybe that has an impact. I don't know, but it would probably be pretty cool if you could do it and start getting people to participate in it.
I think that's a great idea, David, and it's something that the Overview Institute really is supporting, in addition to actually supporting people going in reality. We're supporting people to go in virtual reality. And interestingly enough, I would tell you something that I'm working on with some other colleagues, which is we've been setting up a space station in Second Life. There's two people that I've come to know very well, Kim Peart and Jennifer Bolton, who've been doing some excellent work in Second Life, and they've created a space station, and we have the Earth rotating outside as you look through one of the windows, and we've been setting up to do overview effect conversations there, where we would get together and do exactly the kind of thing you're talking about. Of course, we're not world leaders, but we're trying to get a sense of, well, what would it be like to think about these problems and have that view? And it is very interesting, and I would add one other thing to what you're saying, which really confirms what you're talking about. I didn't know this, but when we did the presentation at the National Air and Space Museum, we were in an area called Moving Beyond Earth, and David Beaver and I were on a dais with Michael Lopez Alegria and Sandy Mag.
Yeah.
And people told me afterward that one of the reasons the topic was so interesting is the whole wall behind us was a view of the Earth, and it was a video. And it was from low Earth orbit, very low Earth orbit. It was not the whole Earth. But I was told that it was very effective in that we were talking about this issue and there was this very powerful visual behind us. And that wasn't even zero gravity. I mean, that was just one visual.
Well, I think you would start off with my idea with getting secretaries of state or the equivalents. Just like they had this big meeting in Geneva last week about Iran's nuclear weapons. So you get these guys to see who would support this. And I don't know, maybe they'd take a day out and maybe, you know, that you could sell it or raise the money from some foundation or something to pay for the special effects and the way the movie Gravity was done. And I bet you could build on it. I think it would probably go viral, and I bet it'd be really, really wildly successful and would evolve being even more successful. Would it impact leadership in countries? I have no clue.
Well, you know, what's interesting about your idea, David, is that the leaders, there would probably be some impact, and they would just have to start thinking in a different way. So just participating in something like that for one day would probably have impact on them, but perhaps even more important, if you raise money to do that summit conference in simulated space, it would draw a lot of attention around the world for people to see it and to think about it and to think about, well, what if we did start making decisions like that? What would it be like? And would it improve the state of the world? So,
well, you might get citizens in Iran and China to think about it. I don't think you'd get any progress from their governments. I don't think North Korea or any of the you know, the terrorist groups and supports, they wouldn't be involved in it. So it'd be really a grassroots movement, plus a couple of, I'm assuming it would be Western nations that would probably try to at least use that perspective when they could. You know, they're still, they have to be grounded in reality of the kind of world we live in today. And, but you know, if you got this going, you know, who knows where it might evolve to over 20 plus years or something. But we know we're not going to get a summit in space. That's just not going to be.
No, that's a metaphor at the moment.
Right. But this would be a way to kind of simulate that and build on it and probably be a lot of fun. And then make candidate, have an overview effect school for political candidates running for national office.
I like that idea.
You know, and then they can claim, I've gone through the overview effect school.
That would be that would be a positive for their resume, right?
Well, I'm thinking so, and so I'm grounded in reality, but I also know the potential of what our nation and our world can be. So I bring to the table a mix of reality, knowing the kind of world we live in today and the kind of world we all want to live in today. And if their opposition doesn't go to the overview effect political school, screw them. they get a ding maybe from, you know, from the, I don't know, there's just, of course, everything takes money and time and, you know, so, but at least it's fun to fantasize.
I don't think it's too far from reality. I've been, you know, a couple of things I would mention to you is, one, I am working on a project that's funded by ESA with a company called Space Synapse in England. And we've done quite a lot of work on looking at what it would take to simulate the experience. One of the developments that is kind of exciting is there's a new tool called the Oculus Rift headset. And from what I've heard, it's an extremely realistic virtual reality tool. And I'm very anxious to try it because from what I've heard, it's very, very effective. And that's one of the whole challenges here is immersion. You've got to, again, going back to the film Gravity, it was pretty immersive if you watched it in 3D. And I believe we really need to get to that point where you do feel immersed in the experience. And another thing I would mention along these lines, I have to say, I like your overview effects school for politicians. I'm going to think about that. It's a very interesting concept. But one of the things that's occurred to me is that if the overview effect is as important as we think it is, it should be a right of everyone to experience it, either through simulation or direct experience. And in fact, almost a responsibility that we really, Buckminster Fuller said years and years ago, we need a mass education program so that everyone will know that we're already in space. And that's kind of what I'm thinking of here. And one of the things we've been discussing at the Overview Institute, and it's not a project officially yet, but one of the things that I felt strongly about is the idea of an overview scholarship, so that as these flights begin to happen, people who do not have the money for a ticket would be able to go because of what they would do when they returned. And what we've been talking about is raising money. The carriers wouldn't have to put out a dime, but we would raise the money to fly people who would go because they have a great idea for how they would use the overview effect experience when they come back. This could be extended, of course, to simulations as well, but it seems to me that we now understand the power of the concept. We know what it did for the 500-plus astronauts who have had it. Now how do we expand it to a much larger population? And I believe that brings us back to the film, because in a way, whether consciously or unconsciously, that was an effort to transmit this experience and this message to a large number of people.
Got another email for you.
Mm.
And listeners, we're coming up on the end of the show, so if you are available for using the phone, you got to do it. 1-866-687-7223, and still time for more email questions, drspace@thespaceshow.com. This is from Joe in Billings, Montana. And Joe said, David, I was in the audience at Rocky Mountain College in March when Dr. Jurist and you had the panel discussions with the astronauts. The astronauts were Walt Cunningham, and they were Jack Schmidt, and I forget the solar astronaut's name, but it'll come to me before I finish my email, I hope. Anyway, a listener in the audience at Rocky Mountain College asked each astronaut if they had experienced anything like the overview effect. I recall they said they had never heard of it and asked what it was. The listener attempted to describe it as a spiritual effect, seeing the Earth as one without borders, etc., and things like that. They all said they had never had any experience about it, had not talked to anybody about it, and that they didn't see anything like that. They just were busy doing their jobs and seeing Earth as they saw it, but they didn't think of it in spiritual terms. Do you know if you ever interviewed Walt Cunningham or Jack Schmidt? How many astronauts that you actually talked to did not recount an overview effect experience?
David, I'm really glad this question was asked. And the issue here is the term spiritual. I think that we have tried at the Overview Institute to redefine or reposition what happens to a cognitive shift rather than a spiritual experience. The cognitive shift is this experience of understanding where we are in the universe or where we are in the solar system, and that we are actually on a planet rather than what we experience when we're on the surface, which is intellectually we know that, but we don't experience it. And honestly, I've not talked to any astronaut who didn't have that cognitive shift and didn't have the different elements that we've talked about, which is the lack of borders and boundaries, the environmental fragility of the Earth, and elements like that. I haven't talked to anybody who didn't have that experience. I have talked to astronauts who would not describe their experience as spiritual or an epiphany or anything of that nature. And I think, unfortunately, the Internet has focused on some of the more extraordinary experiences and have defined it as a spiritual experience. But in my book, I go through that question and ask, is it a spiritual experience? And what we're saying is that this cognitive shift that people have may open up the opportunity for what we would call spirituality, but it is not in and of itself that. So I'm not too surprised at the reaction the astronauts gave, and I'm not too surprised that they said they never heard of the Overview effect, because, again, we have to remind ourselves that's a name I gave to the experience, and at the time when I gave that name to it, people had been having the experience, well, for 20 years. And they had no name for it. And the astronauts you're mentioning there were people who had the flight before the book came out.
Oh, yeah. Jack was the last one, Apollo 17, on the moon, and
yeah.
Walt was before that. The astronaut, gentleman Joe could not remember is Lauren Acton, who is payload master and a solar scientist. Let's see, I believe Skylab was involved with some of them so that it went a little bit after that, but we're talking about the 70s.
Well, now, one question. Who was it that asked this question, Joe?
Joe was in the audience, so he might have been a student. This was a series of panel discussions in the morning and the evening that I chaired and narrated for everybody. And it was at Rocky Mountain College for the students and the professors that wanted to come here. At the audiovisual room where they had it was packed, so there were probably maybe 300 people there. And we did a morning panel for about 2 hours and an afternoon panel. And then they spoke to the Rocky Mountain Aviation Department, which is strictly aviation. It didn't have anything to do with space, for about an hour and a half during lunch about their test pilot and flying stuff for Walt Cunningham. And Jack, of course, is a geologist scientist, and Lauren was a solar scientist, but they all spoke about their experiences to the aviation department during lunch, which I did not attend, but I did narrate the two things. They're actually archived. The Rocky filmed them and gave me permission to archive them on the Space Shell site, so the panels are up on the Space Shell website. They're in early March or mid-March. I don't remember the exact date, but I do recall somebody asking that question, and another cool question that was asked was a little kid who was wearing his Cub Scout uniform, and he asked how many of the astronauts that they knew had a background in scouting, be it Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, surprisingly, they said, you know, a high percentage of them, almost all of them, had been scouts, including the women. That it was not uncommon to find astronauts with an incredible background at some level in one of the scout programs.
That is really interesting.
So, and the kid was just, he was a really young little kid, and he was just jumping for joy in his scout uniform.
Well, I will say, I think that there is a natural connection between scouting and being an astronaut. I've seen that too. And I will say, Lauren Acton, I did interview for the Overview Effect for, I think, the second edition. So, well, no, the first edition too. Anyway,
I don't remember what he said.
It, he's in there.
Yeah, I don't.
He's in the book.
I remember that Jack and Walt, I believe they both said they weren't familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
But my memory may be shot. So, but the archives are up on the website for people.
Right.
They're video archives, and they're also on our Space Show Vimeo site. So we've got both the tongue twisted here, the audio and the video. If anyone wants to go back and hear the question, you will hear it, and you will hear each of their responses, which would be a lot more accurate than my memory.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
But I think it was amazing that the question came up, because it wasn't a question that I, as moderator, asked. It was a question that came out of the audience.
Right. Once again, I think the concept is being transmitted out there, and it's raising questions, and people are talking about it, which is really, really what I wanted from the start, which was to begin this dialogue.
And again, we're in Billings, Montana, so I'm not trying to put down Billings or Rocky Mountain College. This was not Harvard or UCLA,
right,
or Cal Berkeley, you know, where you might expect this kind of stuff. But you don't necessarily think of it coming out of Billings, Montana, in a small liberal arts college like Rocky Mountain, but that's where it came from.
I think I would just say, I know we're getting close to the end here, just something I want to share with your listeners from my own experience is that if you have an idea that you want to get out into the world, don't give up on it. I've been working at this for a long, long time, and the real success of getting this concept out for discussion has only been manifest in the last few years. So don't give up on your dream. Don't give up on your idea, and put it out there. It's a good thing to do.
Well, what's great about you and the Overview Effect is that you have been so successful, so that if, God forbid, something happened to you, the idea is out there with people who are working to expand it even further. So the idea doesn't end with you. And I think that is really important. So for people who have a great idea or a concept and want to get it out there, you need to also think about getting it into the hands of people who can keep it going from generation to generation.
Yeah, you're so right. Do we have 1 minute?
Sorry. Yeah,
okay.
You got all the time you need. Don't worry about that.
Okay. Well, I do want to tell a story. Guy Reed is the brilliant director of the film Overview that I was talking about. And when we premiered it at Harvard, we had just ended a very successful event. We were going to the reception, and Guy said to me, "Frank, I really want to thank you for your persistence and your effort over all these years, and the fact that you never gave up on sharing the Overview Effect with others, because if you had given up, we wouldn't have had a night like this." And it was very, very touching to me, and I said to him, the reason I kept going was that I was hoping someone like you would come along and pick up the torch. So I want to thank you in return. And it reminds me, David, I want to thank you, because many years ago, I'm quite sure the first interview I did with you was in the 90s, wasn't it?
No, because I started the show in 2001.
So much for my memory.
I'll tell you when you did it. I'll pull it up real quick. But
okay.
I think you probably, because I read your book as part of my PhD dissertation. So my hunch is that I probably had you on in the very early years of the space show. Here, let's see. You were on in 2012, 2008. 2007 with David Beaver, 2004, 2003 is when you were the first on the show, May 8th, 2003. Interesting. That's the date of my bar mitzvah.
Really?
Yeah, May 8th.
Okay.
Of course, in, let's see, 46, 56, 59.
Amazing.
But May 8th. So maybe there's something significant for that. I don't know.
How appropriate. Well, in any event, you've been interested in this, and you've been helping to disseminate this concept for a very, very long time, and more than once. And I just want to thank you for your willingness to air this idea and to share it with people.
Well, it's a great idea, and it needs to continue to go, and now it needs to get in. You need to get it into the hands of the people at Gravity. So,
okay, that's our next step.
That's the next step for both of us. So, keep me posted. And obviously, when you have the third edition ready, we'll be back on the show talking about it, and I look forward
to
that. Okay, Frank, thank you very much. And listeners, that is it for today. And, you know, you want to come back on Sunday for our regular Sunday Space Show program. And we have a full week next week. And all of you have a great weekend. Keep it safe and, you know, play smart. Don't play stupid. And that way you'll be back on Monday for the next week's programs. Thank you all again on behalf of Frank White, The Overview Effect, and The Space Show. Goodbye, everyone.